You're listening to a message delivered at the Fountains, a United Methodist Church in Fountain Hills, Arizona.
A number of years ago, I was wrapping up a Bible study comparing the Gospels, and someone said to me, "I am so relieved to know that I'm not crazy. Every Easter, I'd hear the story read, and I could have swore that all the details were different from the previous year. Every year. I just chalked it up to having a really bad memory." Nope, your memory is just fine. Year to year, depending on which gospel is read, you get a whole different order of events, a different cast of characters, and a different agenda. Clearly, there are two angels. No, wait, just one. There are three women. Mary Magdalene. Just Jesus putzing around in the garden. No, he's not here. He's already back in Galilee fixing breakfast. But of all the Easter stories, this particular passage doesn't get as much attention as the other accounts. Even though Mark is the earliest gospel and closest to the real action, the ending is just kind of, well, abrupt. Did someone lose the last page? Is Mark just a bad storyteller? The ending is just not as satisfying as the other gospels. So let's join the story already in progress and see if we can't find out what Mark is up to.
Our words of wisdom are from Mark chapter 16, verses 1 through 8.
When the Sabbath was over, Mary Magdalene and Mary, the mother of James, and Salome brought spices so that they might go and anoint him. And very early on the first day of the week, when the sun had risen, they went to the tomb. They had been saying to one another,
"Who will roll away the stone for us from the entrance to the tomb?"
When they looked up, they saw that the stone, which was very large, had already been rolled back. As they entered the tomb, they saw a young man dressed in a white robe sitting on the right side, and they were alarmed. But he said to them,
"Do not be alarmed. You are looking for Jesus of Nazareth, who was crucified. He has been raised. He is not here. Look, there is the place they laid him. But go, tell his disciples and Peter that he is going ahead of you to Galilee. There you will see him, just as he told you."
So they went out and fled from the tomb, for terror and amazement had seized them, and they said nothing to anyone, for they were afraid.
Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church.
Thanks be to God.
One day I was coming out of a shop during Holy Week, and I think I had a bunch of Easter candy for the kids' Easter baskets, and the cashier was trying his best to be hospitable. He started off in a chipper, "Have a nice..." And it sounded like he was about to say, and it would have been natural with all of the Easter candy that I had, to say Easter. But he thought better of it, and instead he caught himself, probably thinking, "Uh-oh, I don't want to offend anyone." So he trailed off with a kind of depressing, "Have a good, whatever." Now, if you don't know what Mark is up to, reading the end of the Gospel of Mark can be equally kind of deflating. I mean, read the other Gospel accounts in Matthew, Luke, and John. They all tell the story with triumphant shouts of joy, disciples running to and fro, angels giving directions, everyone breathlessly sharing the good news. "He is risen! He is risen!" You read those narratives, and you could just see the lilies bursting forth in glory all over the place, the resurrection of all the earth into the new life of spring. That's an Easter, right? That's the Easter we have in mind when we think of Easter Sunday celebration. Singers, dancers, music, flowers. Compared with that, the Gospel of Mark is, well, downright disappointing. Look at it. It's pitiful. just 8 verses at the end of the 16th chapter. Most of your Bibles have a verse 9 that goes to the 20th verse, telling of some resurrection appearances. But even the most conservative translation acknowledges that Mark originally ended the gospel at verse 8. Look at your Bible. There'll be a footnote there saying, oldest manuscripts end at verse 8, which means the others were added later, no doubt by well-intentioned scribes and theologians who didn't get what Mark was up to either. I can see how anyone could be excused in thinking, hey, the ending to this gospel is missing. 3 women go out to the tomb. The disciples were nowhere to be found. They'd all run away when Jesus was arrested. But the women who followed him right from the beginning followed him clear through to the end. And now it's time to prepare the body for burial. It's the day after the Sabbath, the crack of dawn. They come at the first possible moment to perform this act of tenderness and kindness for the one they loved. But as they approach the tomb, they notice that the stone has already been moved. Somebody's been there before them, and they're frightened. They enter cautiously, afraid. There, a man dressed in white says to them, "Don't be amazed. You're looking for Jesus, the crucified. He's risen. He's not here. Go, tell his disciples." Then Mark says, they went out and fled from the tomb, for trembling and astonishment had come upon them, and they said nothing to anyone, for they were afraid. The end. That's it. No resurrection appearances. No disciples shouting, "He is risen!" No choirs, no flowers, just mute, frightened disciples. What kind of ending is that? It's not a proper ending. A proper ending should have Jesus showing up, showing himself to a few witnesses. In fact, more than a few witnesses. I mean, you got to have witnesses to this kind of thing. Do something amazing, too, like walk through a door, a closed door. Then at the end, have the disciples come together for a glorious farewell as Jesus ascends into heaven on a cloud. Now that's an ending. And that's what you would expect. And that's what you get in the other 3 Gospels. But no, not Mark. Mark ends it where he does, tentatively, like an unopened Easter lily. But hold on. Maybe Mark is on to something here. You know what you do with an ending? You close the book. An ending gives a story closure. Conflict is resolved. Good triumphs over evil, so we can close the book. Story's over. All is right with the world. Mark doesn't have that ending because Mark knows all is not right with the world. So Jesus goes before us to make it right through you and me. So Mark's ending is not an ending. It's a cliffhanger. Do you know how Mozart's father is alleged to have roused him out of bed every morning? Most pieces of music end with what's called a 2-5-1 chord progression. You recognize it when you hear it as the end of a song. Dun 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 dun. Well, Mozart's father used to play that progression and leave off the final note. Dun 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 dun. Little Mozart would hear the unresolved progression of chords and would be compelled to leap out of bed, run to the keyboard, and play da. Otherwise, it'd drive him crazy. That, friends, is exactly the trick that Mark is playing on his listeners. Mark has left the story unresolved, with the idea that if you're a disciple worth your salt, you'll be compelled to jump up and resolve it with your life. The man dressed in white said, "He's going before you. Meet him back in Galilee, where it all started, in your homes, in your work, in your everyday life. He's going before you." That means always in front of us, inviting us to follow, inviting us to be inwardly transformed and in turn, transform the world. He's going before us to help eradicate injustice in the world, poverty, violence. The same is true for your personal life. If your life is not the way you want it right now, He's going before you to lead you into the life that you were created for, to free us from whatever holds us in bondage, whether that bondage is of our own doing or if it's because of other life circumstances. Or maybe you live a life that is the way you've always wanted it. You've achieved all of your goals in life. You have arrived, and there's still something missing. Maybe that's because life is not found in arriving, but in growing, in moving, in stretching. Part of the Wesleyan heritage of Methodism is believing that we never arrive, not in this life. Life is a journey and our calling. And in our story for today, the angel is telling the women that he is going on before us. And then Mark leaves it up to us. After all, you can't expect to leave it up to those lunkhead disciples in the Bible. The text said that they've all run away and said nothing to anyone, for they were afraid. If anything is actually going to get done, then it's up to who? It's up to us. Back in 2006, the world lost an amazing world changer, William Sloan Coffin. Growing up in a privileged family, he grew into speaking out for the poor. Coming of age serving in the Army and the CIA, he matured in the 1960s into one of the most outspoken religious leaders supporting civil rights and protesting against Vietnam and nuclear proliferation. As pastor of Riverside Church in New York City, among other things, he is a person who, whether you know it or not, has had an influence on you through his influence in this country's policies dealing with peace, nuclear proliferation, and numerous social justice issues. As part of his memorial, a friend of his was recounting one of Coffin's memorable Easter sermons. Coffin laid out all the ways the world was in darkness and at risk, how there's conflict, misunderstanding, poverty, racism, violence. But over here, a little group is overcoming its fear and is working to do this. And over there, a group is overcoming its hesitancy and working to do that, until it almost seems like, despite the imperfections of the world, there might be a glimmer of hope, brought on by flawed and regular people just like us. By God's grace, we bring new life to the world. And then, right in the middle of his sermon, this otherwise dignified man shocked everyone and uncharacteristically threw up his arms and shouted, "Bloom, frozen Christians!" And that's our stream of thought for this Easter. Bloom, frozen Christians. That's what Mark's gospel cliffhanger is all about. It's about us being left hanging and being compelled to bloom, compelled to jump up and finish the story. It's about cracking through the glacier-thick ice of the status quo and springing to life. It's like an unopened Easter lily, an unresolved melody. It's supposed to drive you crazy. to fill you with a sense of obligation. The story's not over. Don't close the book. Like baby Mozart, jump up and finish the story. You can't expect to count on others to do it for you. They've all run away and have said nothing to anyone. So get up. Jesus has gone before you. There's nothing to fear. He is the pioneer and model of our faith, of life, of death, and of new life. And may our new life be less like the cowering disciples and closer in likeness to those who know that if the world is ever going to reflect Jesus' vision, it's up to us. So bloom, frozen Christians, and happy Easter.
Thanks for listening to this week's Applying It to Life from the Fountains. For more information or to support this outreach with a donation, visit www.weputlovefirst.org.